In this segment, we're talking to a group of Oakland-based activists who went to the Zapatista Escuelita in the January and December trips. Thank you all for being here with us. And we just want to start off by maybe giving us your name, when you went to the Escuelita, and what caracol you visited. You want to start here?
Yeah, sure. Hi, my name is Martíos. I went to La Escuelita Zapatista this past December, and I was in La Realidad.
My name is Jordan. I went in this past January, and I was in Roberto Barrios.
Hi, my name is Coconeta, and I went in January as well, and was also in Roberto Barrios.
Can you share a little bit about why you wanted to participate in the Escuelitas?
Okay. Well, I wanted to participate in the Escuelita specifically to look at and study and learn from the Zapatistas about their autonomous structure of governance. Really trying to look at the way that they organize themselves and try to see whether or not some of those practices can be transferred over here in certain spaces, governing spaces and civic institutions.
I was also interested in their autonomous way of governance. In particular, I was interested in autonomous and alternative ways of doing school and education that is community-based and for the people, and how that also ties into their work of autonomous governments and self-sustenance.
I attended the Escuelita Zapatista as part of a delegation of folks who were majority from Oakland and also different West Coast cities. We also had people from Seattle in our contingent. And what we wanted to really take from it is find different ways of also building autonomy, and the way, similarly to what you others said as well about and autonomous teaching methods, and basically figuring out ways to apply it here in Oakland.
Mm-hmm. Great. So you all said which caracol you went to, but what specific community did you go to, and how did you get there? We've heard a lot about the really different kinds of ways that people got to their communities.
I, like I said, I was in La Realidad, but the community they sent me to was Santa Rosa. To get to La Realidad, it was a good 10 hours from San Cristóbal de las Casas, and then it was another hour and a half drive from La Realidad to Santa Rosa in the back of a truck, and then it was about an hour hike in the mud from where they dropped us off to the community. And it was really rainy, so it was a lot of mud.
From San Cristobal, it was about a 9-hour truck ride to Roberto Barrios. And then from there, I was going to the Pueblo of Cuba, and that was an extra 2-hour taxi ride. I was lucky I didn't have to walk or boat or anything like that. But yeah, the Pueblo had about 10 families there.
Yeah, I was also in Roberto Barrios, so it was about a 9-hour truck ride, and there was about 12 of us in the back of that truck for 9 hours. And then once we got to the Caracol, Roberto Barrios, my comunidad was also about 2 hours from the Caracol, and it was about a 40-minute walk into the selva, into the jungle, from where the truck dropped us off. So I did do some walking in the mud. Yes, I did.
How did you share the everyday experience of the compañeros in your pueblo? And can you also tell us a little bit about how you spent your day typically?
A typical day for me in Santa Rosa was... Well, the first day, I guess, honestly, we were only there for about 3 days. I was in my community. And so each day was, we did something different. The first day we went to go work basically and harvest cacao. And the first day was more work focused and less like let's sit down and read focused. It wasn't until the second day where we actually sat down and read the textbooks that we had received during registration. And but aside from like the escuelita stuff, it was mostly a lot of just interacting with the family where we were housed and also with the families around us, and then just like doing day-to-day things. Like I didn't actually get to do any kitchen or domestic work because a lot of the work is gendered, but I did hang out a lot like with the kids in the kitchen and did a lot more sort of like day-to-day things, really, like play with the family and have and like share meals with them.
My day started at around 4 every morning, and that was pretty consistent. We would wake up, and the first thing would be to make tortillas. And so we would, like, make the masa and then make the tortillas by hand. And usually that took until about, like, 8 in the morning and then have breakfast. The first day, we also went to the field to do some weeding, and that was like about an hour walk from the community. And it was really cool because pretty much everyone in the community waited to walk together at the same time. And then after we got to the field, we literally like all lined up and started weeding together at the same time. And so it was really great just to see how like all the work was being done collectively. The second and the third days, they didn't have enough time for us to like go all the way to the other field because it was significantly further. And I think they also wanted us to be focusing a lot on the studying. And so we had one day which was just studying, and then we also had like a community celebration with people. The pueblo I was in, there were also lots of folks from different parts of South America and DF. And so we did like a kind of final like celebration thing, which was really nice.
My day started off around 8 in the morning, and every morning we would have breakfast together. I would help grind the maíz for the masa, but they never allowed me to make the tortillas, which I thought was pretty interesting. I think they thought I would mess them up. Which I probably would. But they were, you know, they were always, like, ready to make them every morning. So every morning we had fresh-made tortillas. And then my first day, I think I did pretty much all studying. But something that happened throughout all the days was that they always asked me if I wanted to wash my clothes at the Rio. So every day, like, I washed clothes, and every day I took a shower in the Rio. And that was really interesting because you know, it's just, like, open, and there's, like, a little caidita with agua. But there's, like, so much mud in between that, you know? And I fell in the mud. On the way back. No, like, on the way there, which made sense, right? It's like, okay, pues, ya estoy sucia. I'm going to take a shower or whatever. But then on the way back, I fell again, and I came back, like, dirtier than I left. But then I got better at it, and, you know, That was just, like, I think they were really concerned about, like, oh, are you okay? Like, you know, they were really, really accommodating. On the second day, I went to the milpa, and we helped harvest camotes, yams. So that was really great. And then the third day, the day started blending, but we also had a Q&A session where they got all of the alumnos, and they just kind of opened it up and said, you know, what do you want to know? Which was really great. And then on the last day, we had, like, a celebration, and it was really, really great.
We saw in Las Zapatistas that during the first round of the escuelitas, there was a military flyover of the communities. Did you witness any forms of repression during the escuelitas, the rounds that you attended? And did the compas discuss current state of repression while you were there?
I actually didn't encounter any sort of anything myself, at least not in Santa Rosa. I did hear from others who were part of our delegation that they had heard word that the militares were flying over, but it wasn't. At least my compas made it sound like it wasn't a huge deal. Folks were very aware of it and prepared, but it wasn't like a huge red alert or something.
I actually also did hear on the 11-hour bus ride back from La Realidad, there was a group of people who were saying that they, on the way from the Caracol to their pueblo, that there had been like a cement truck that was being, what's that word when there's like the military in front of them? Escorted, like through in the highway, and that the cement truck spilled, and that they were there for like 8 hours for waiting for someone to come and pick up the like cement stuff from the highway. So all this whole caravan that was going with the people to their pueblo was stopped for 8 hours in the highway. So yeah, but then they ended up picking it up in 8 hours and then just laughing and leaving. So what, something else we wanted to ask was maybe what was a key question that was answered for you through your experience? Can we switch the question up a little bit? okay, so since many of us here at Radio Autonomía are teachers, we're really interested in autonomous education and learning. Was there any discussion of how the communities organize education? Or how does the escuelita itself resemble or differ from the autonomous schools in the communities?
I mean, I really wanted to have the chance to see how education was being organized. That was one of the main things I was interested in. But during the 3 days I was there, unfortunately, I wasn't able to see any school happening. I heard down the grapevine, I don't know, that the next escuelita is probably going to be about education. So that would be really exciting to go to. There was also one question asked during the question and answer session. Someone wanted to know, like, what happened since the Zapatistas are organizing their own education pretty much through what might be considered high school. Like, what would happen if a member of the community wanted to go to university? And the answer was pretty much that since they don't have their own universities yet, that they should wait till a Zapatista university is organized. So they were very much discouraging people from going to the state or a non-Zapatista university, which I thought was interesting. And I think that's a testament to, you know, how much they're prioritizing their autonomy and how important education is in playing into that.
Yeah, just to speak off that a little bit, I was in the same session as
Jordan.
And I think, yeah, just to speak on that a little bit more, I think another reason why they said that is because they said that the university is also the university that is not Zapatista or the capitalist university is a tool for that capitalization to perpetuate. And so that's not, as Jordan said, that's not, you know, aligned with the Zapatismo or the Zapatista practice. So if someone wanted to go to university, then they would create their own university, you know, so.
Yeah, I think I didn't actually get to interact too much with the schools in the communities, but I guess what was more striking to me was the way that La Escuelita was modeled for us, in the way that they invited people to come and not only learn from them, but learn with them. And I think that approach is already radically different from what we're used to here in the U.S. It's a model of education that where the knowledge is being reciprocated between people and not just like being given down from an institution. And I think that's to answer like not only the question about education, but like to answer also the question that you preemptively asked about what I learned. I think that was one of the things that impacted me the most was the way that they had really communalized in a lot of ways, or made this knowledge as a way of like mutual aid and not just like it belonging to one entity, one person, like, but like, this is all of our, this is our way of autonomy, but you, we have just as much to learn from you as you do from us. At least that's the energy that I felt while I was there.
I also think something I learned from reading the books and also asking my host family about this was that they had a pretty big discussion about what, how people were going to be, like how they were going to measure whether students were learning what they needed to learn, like in the autonomous schools. And something that they highlighted was that they wanted to make sure that people understood why, or that the students understood why the Zapatistas live that way, and that for them it wasn't like, oh, what are they going to write or what are they going to read, but how are they going to practice their everyday lives. And it was more of like, we know that people are learning if they can practice what we believe as a community. And I thought that was something that was really pretty amazing, because it's like vastly different from the idea that like you need to learn XYZ in order to say that you've learned. And something else too that I thought was really interesting, the part, my Botan's husband was a teacher, so she told me that that they actually, that teachers in their community at least, that their collective work is like, being a teacher is part of their collective work, so they'll still have to like, you know, like work their own fields and everything, but just as people, someone else would go and work the coffee fields, or any of the other collective fields, they, the people who are teachers in the autonomous schools, like that's their collective contribution, which I thought was really amazing that people can choose that as like what they're going to contribute in the collective pool of work.
The escuelitas were held just after the 10th anniversary of the founding of the Caracoles in the Zapatista communities, the 20th anniversary of the public uprising, and the 30th anniversary of collective organizing. And according to the compas, what have been the major accomplishments during these years?
In terms of major accomplishments, I think they are really, aside from being really invested into like the work that they've been putting in for decades now, they're really, I think like the level of community that they've been able to build amongst one another in order to maintain their autonomy as an entire region is a really big accomplishment that they've, I think, may not have necessarily worded that way, but I think they were putting a lot of emphasis on that this is like, we are like proud of the work that we're doing because this is our own and it doesn't belong to any state entity. It only belongs to the people creating it.
I think something else that they were emphasizing a lot was the work they were doing with regard to gender. And I think based on my experience there, definitely there's a lot of work still to be done. Kind of like how you were saying before, a lot of the labor is still gendered, but the degree of consciousness and awareness about it, and also just the degree of intentionality in addressing it, was like very, very apparent. And this was like clear in the leadership. This was clear even in, you know, what they were addressing to us as alumnos. Like they had an entire book that was dedicated to it, and they just highlighted it a lot. And other than that, I would say it seems like they are very invested in building separate institutions. So they've been putting a lot of work into building their own health system, their own education system, and these are things that are really getting off the ground now. And so seeing how their model of collectivism as a way of organizing and how that can create institutions that are serving the community, I mean, that's kind of what I got most out of it, and I think that's one of the things that they were emphasizing the most.
I think what I remember also is them highlighting some of the not-so-successful things that have happened over the last 10, 20 years. I think one of the books highlights the coffee business that they were doing, I think, out of Oventique, and how it was corrupt, and how, you know, unfortunately, they had to stop that. But that, how do you address that and keep moving forward, you know? And I think that their ability to do that and their ability to, you know, not necessarily use, like, U.S.-based, like, punishment, but more of, like, collective work as a way of, like, addressing some of those issues of greed and things like that, I think have been successful in and of themselves, despite, like, the coffee business not continuing. That's something that I remember them saying, that, you know, even in, it's like their own granito de arena, you know, like, I feel like they were making it seem like they're so small, when to me their, like, impact is so worldwide, you know. But they were like, our little bits of effort have, like, allowed us to sustain ourselves, and I thought that was really, really important.
So to ask you again the question I had asked a minute ago, what was a key question that was answered for you through your experience?
I think I kind of touched on this already, but I think for me, what I left with was kind of just their model of organizing. And I think that, I don't know, in anarchist spaces, I feel like sometimes that's not highlighted as much. And also, I feel like the autonomy that people talk about often turns into autonomy of self, whereas in the Zapatista community, I saw it really as a collective autonomy. And they're just incredibly well organized, and the degree of ideological unity I felt was also really high, and I think that contributed a lot to how they were so organized. And even, like, the Votan is, like, they had spent 5 months training to be, because each of us got a guardian while we were there, so they spent 5 months training to be your guardian before you arrived there. And at least my guardian was extremely, extremely serious about the role that she was playing. Like, she literally did not let me out of her sight the entire time that I was there. And I think that degree of seriousness and discipline, I was really impressed with. And so, yeah.
Just to I guess go back to one of the, like, a comment that you just made, and, like, in reference to, like, a lot of the labor being gendered also, is that, and this is definitely something that I realized after the little school, is that despite the fact that these are traditional gender roles in regards to work, in regards to, like, work in the field or work in the home, and the way that men and women were expected to do different things in those regards, I think that, like you said, despite these traditional gender roles, that was still acknowledged as such. It wasn't looked at it as something idealistic, but, like, these are people's dignity was being acknowledged, and people's were being respected for the work that they did. And that had less to do with gender, really, or even gender roles. It was just about having to do the work and acknowledging that comes with certain issues.
I think that there was, during the Q&A session, there were a lot of great questions, but I think for me, the most important thing that I learned was just, like, who the Zapatistas are. Like, I just, for me, like, it was just so great to see, like, it was, like, literally regular people, like, women, men, children, grandmothers, grandparents, like, just regular folks that were dedicated enough and, like, were also, like, dreamed big enough to dream up and, like, build these different worlds, you know, like, this autonomous world that exists, that is there, that is working, that is struggling and thriving, you know. So for me, like, that was just great, like, to demystify that. So
something I would say is, I don't know if I went there with this question, but something that I took back with me was actually something that I thought about with the question about accomplishments was the fact that they were able, something that they talked about a lot, but that it wasn't like they were like, this is what we've accomplished, is the fact that they've been able to set up a process where regardless of the mistakes that are made or like, you know, like with the corruption and people just like not doing their part in the collective process, that they've set up a process in which they can address those things collectively and move forward. And I think that that's actually something that a lot of groups, I mean, I can speak to my own experience, actually can't really even hold on to, you know, just having a process of being like, we're going to make decisions together. And even if we mess up and even if we have problems and can't make solutions, we're going to, we have this process to move forward. And I think that a lot of the times, like, in working in collectives, that people get stuck there. So it was pretty, like, that was one of the things that I took back with me, was having, seeing that, like, people could do it was, like, pretty inspiring.
Are there any other things that you all would want to share with our listeners that you haven't been able to express? And also, in one last little thing is, how do you see Zapatismo influencing the work that you do here at home?
I don't even know how deep I will become more familiar with it, but just how deep like the experience impacted me, and particularly speaking about using those teachings in my own work, I'd like to involve myself in different aspects of civic engagement here in the U.S. and in U.S. cities. I think a lot of the times, you know, a lot of different projects are happening within our communities. People are getting displaced. Resources are not being allocated. There's a clear lack of attention to low-income communities, food-wise, resource-wise, I mean, all these different things. And so that information stream is very calculated, right? And so I think for me it was great to see, like, a community be so informed and so in tune and so invested in, like, everything that happens. And I think it's because there's an ownership there. There's a collective understanding that if one person isn't informed, then, you know, all of us are going to fail. So I think that's how I'll be using those teachings, that's how I hope to implement a lot of what I learned into the work that I hope to do.
I mean, for me, I think it was just really inspiring to see a community that is able to live collectively and sustainably, and really enjoy spending time with each other. Like, a good part of their day was just spent together, enjoying each other's company, and also getting work done. And also, like, that was most of the work. Most of the work was just producing food and keeping the community alive. And I think that, I don't know, it was just really inspiring to see that being a reality. And, you know, that gives me hope for what we can create here as well.
I think that something in terms of, like, bringing it back into the U.S. or into this context, I think it really kind of reified the commitment to, like, at the basis of it, like, growing your own food, because I felt like what I saw in the communities was that there would be no way that they could practice their autonomy if they couldn't feed themselves. Like, there was, like, so little things that they had bought from outside of their communities because they produced what they needed, you know? Like, their beans, their corn, their squash, they had it in their house, you know? So I think that one of the things that it just, like, really reinforced the idea that we kind of have to, like, figure out whatever way possible to be able to feed ourselves, because if you want to practice autonomy but don't have anything to eat, it's, like, you know? And they talked about that, about how there were some neighbors of their community who weren't Zapatistas who believed that if they didn't take the state's help with, like, oil and grains and all that, that they wouldn't have food because they don't have the same level of agricultural work that they have in their region. So, yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on the show. And we also had, Martillo's had an announcement about today at El Quilombo at 2313 San Pablo Avenue. For all of you in the Bay Area, there will be a panel or another report back about the Escuelita Zapatista at 6 p.m. So thank you all, and hope to see you again.
Thank you. Thank you.